Hello, I'm Michael Barr.
And I'm Scott Soschnick. Every week at this time, plus Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, we explore the big money issues in the world of sports.
On today's show, we speak with the CFO of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Tucker Cain. But first, let's look at the top stories of the week. Joining us, as every week, is Bloomberg Business of Sports reporter Evan Novy Williams. And we're going to start. Now, see, this is, you know that I love the Illich family.
Detroit.
It's Detroit. And you know.
They did this for you.
They did this for me. They're going to start a regional sports network. All for me.
They're considering starting a regional sports network. That's the important part. They're considering, because right now they're with Fox Sports Detroit, but the deal expires in a few hours. Years. I said hours. They better hurry up and get that RSN up and running. Fun time in RSN world, though. I mean, recently we've talked about the Fox sale of the RSNs. In many cases, they do spin off some nice positive cash flow, but one can ask Mr. Les Alexander out in Houston. It doesn't always work. That's not the case. And this isn't exactly a new concept. You wonder why the Illich family, you know, they own the winter programming in the Red Wings. They own the summer programming in the Tigers. You need the winter and the summer. They got it, one city. How much, and it's always, this is the question. How much would they charge the cable operators to carry this channel? Tiger, TSE. It's going to be Tiger Sports and Entertainment. I don't know. TR, Tiger Red Wing Sports and Entertainment, TRSE. But how much? What's the price? And at what price do the people of Detroit say no, or the cable operators say no thank you, because we're not passing this along to our customers? It's always about the price.
But the problem is that it, well, I should say a problem. The Tigers, yes, they had a down year, to say the least. But people will still watch the Tigers.
Whitaker and Trammell were good. LaFleur had a nice season.
Well, you know what?
Fidrich was fantastic.
I wonder if this had to do. Remember
Cecil Fielder? Sorry, I'll keep going.
Here we go. Remember Brad the Ausmus? Two guys in the booth, and they got into a fight?
No. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact,
they both got fired.
They both got fired. So I'm wondering now if this kind of has something to do with it.
That's why any fisticuffs in this booth stays here.
The Red Wings and Tigers right now are on Fox Sports Detroit, one of those RSNs that is that is up for question right now.
And moving right, I hope they do it. So my fingers are crossed.
Well, then you got
One subscriber.
You got family back in Detroit, Barr?
Yeah.
How much would they pay for this? How much are they okay with a month paying for this, added to their cable bill?
If you add it to the cable bill,
yeah.
I think they would pay maybe $29.99 a month.
Whoa.
$29.90 for this channel alone?
Oh, the whole season?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. They're going
to. $29. You kidding me? This thing's going to be like $2 to $3.
No, I can see this, but don't see. Now I gave him.
We got a subscriber in the bar house.
I can see you're being written into the wills right now. All right.
Next topic. And this one is rather serious. It's there was a decision in the NCAA trial, and Adidas executive, two other insiders in the college basketball recruiting world were convicted in a corruption case.
Yeah, earlier this week in New York, you know, Judge Lewis Kaplan finally ruled on this FBI bribery probe. Not to the surprise of legal scholars, you know, when the government brings trials like this, they usually win. All three guys, two folks who had worked with Adidas and one who was kind of a middleman for an NBA agency, all three of them found guilty of wire fraud. The ball now shifts to the NCAA. You can kind of make an argument that the government and the court system now is essentially making breaking NCAA rules of federal crime in some ways. The NCAA has always said, we have to wait until the courts figure this out before we wade in. Over the course of the trial, as we've talked about here, a lot of big-name schools, big-name coaches were at least mentioned in connection, may have known about a lot of these payments. Now it's up to the NCAA to sort through all of this and decide who they want to punish, how they want to punish them, et cetera.
What could go wrong? Now, Evan, do I have this right? And I know we don't have a lot of time left because I haven't read my Mike McCann yet, but because Mike tells me what to think on these subjects.
Yeah.
Do I have it right in that, in essence, the decision paints the schools as victims?
Yeah, that was the whole thing. Okay. These guys are guilty of defrauding the universities by tricking them or, you know, falsely getting them to offer scholarships to people who would be ineligible under NCAA rules.
Got it.
Yes, and schools are the victims.
This next topic, I have to admit, I'm excited about it because I do like gambling.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
William Hill is going to run a betting lounge right at Prudential Center, you know, the home of the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, but they still, it's a betting lounge where they can't take bets unless you do it on your mobile phone, which you can do in your living room. So in essence, they're telling me, go to the game, come to the game, hang out in the lounge. They'll have nice TVs. Everything about it will be sportsbook, except for the fact that you can't go to the desk and place a bet. You'll have to do it on your mobile phone, which you can do anywhere in New Jersey now.
That's true, but still, man, it's the atmosphere.
I mean, they're just waiting for the day when the league's okay it, and then it'll be turnkey, and then you can walk to the window and make your bet. It was the logical next step, especially in New Jersey.
Yeah, this is the first partnership between a sports betting house and a U.S. sports league or sports team outside of Vegas. No surprise to us, I think, that the Devils were first here. You know, they're in New Jersey, which was one of the first.
Scott O'Neill loves first mover status.
Friend of the pod, Scott O'Neill loves to do these things first. I don't know if this is going to change much, but you know, this is the future. Just like we saw DraftKings and FanDuel opening lounges in arenas around the country, in the next 5 years, you know, 10 years, we're going to see lounges in almost every.
Can't
stadium
wait to
arena.
Take Jackson to a Devils Red Wings game and say, "Come in the lounge, son. I'm going to teach you how to push these buttons."
Oh, I bet people will love it. See? Okay. Anyway, thanks to Bloomberg Business of Sports reporter Eben Novy Williams. It was funny. You can follow him on Twitter at Novy_Williams.
Why do you promote that still?
I love it, man. And he's got his man bun going, man. Like, it's getting better.
The man bun, the underscore, Medina.
Killing the game over here.
You know how every guy needs the help of some woman out there who's not afraid to tell him the truth? And I've seen you and I've heard you try. Is it just that he's not receptive? Or do you have to be more forceful?
I feel like I have to be more forceful.
Yes.
God, what is this, an intervention, guys? What's going on
here? It's an intervention.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I love it. You can follow me at Soshnik.
Yes, of course. And you can find me on Twitter at Big Bar Sports. We're here each and every week at this time. And catch our podcast. We're available on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Now, Scott and I get into this week's interview with Dodgers CFO Tucker Cain. Tucker enters this sixth year as the CFO of the Los Angeles Dodgers and managing director of Guggenheim Baseball Management after leading the group's efforts to acquire the club in the largest team sports transaction in history in 2012. Cain was instrumental in navigating the execution of the Dodgers' 25th-year agreement with Spectrum, formerly Time Warner Cable, which included the creation and operation of the team's regional sports network, Sportsnet LA. He also oversees the Dodgers Accelerator, a venture capital initiative launched in 2015 by the Dodger Ownership Group to create and participate in value and growth in the sports and entertainment industry.
Woo, even I need a breath. Tuck, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate it, Scott. Happy to be here.
Excellent, excellent. I want to start with the similarities between the two franchises in the championship series. And from a business perspective, I love this. The fact that nobody's got a new stadium. And yet you guys make it work. That's de rigueur these days, is to build these massive cash registers. However, with Fenway and Dodger Stadium, that's really not an option. You got to hold on to that history. Yet both franchises seem to have made it work. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think both organizations try to take it as a pretty great opportunity for us to take a building that has the history that each of Fenway and Dodger Stadium have, and you know, try to do things where we can add some kind of, you know, up-to-date amenities for the fans, things that fans expect, but try to keep that that historical, nostalgic feel, the feel that made these ballparks what they are and what they've been historically. And actually, interestingly, we've both leveraged a similar resource in that scenario. So Janet Marie Smith, who runs all of our planning and development at Dodger Stadium, has worked with the Red Sox in the past, and I think that skill set has allowed each of us to turn, you know, pretty amazing historical venues into modern, exciting, great places to watch a baseball game that harken back to the history of each of the franchises and the cities and the relationships with the fans. So it's a pretty great opportunity, I think, for each of us, and a pretty fun thing to see each of these buildings lit up for the World Series this year.
Now, if you've ever been out there, and those have not, there's a lot of land around Dodger Stadium, and that was part of the deal when Guggenheim bought in. What's the long-range plan? Where do we stand with what's possible surrounding Dodger Stadium?
Yeah, you know, I think we're working through that. As of right now, you know, it's obviously a pretty great asset for us and our fans from a parking perspective, given the way people get around Los Angeles and getting them to Dodger Stadium. We're constantly thinking about how to improve that and think about traffic and transportation. And recently we've announced a couple projects, one of which is an aerial tram from Union Station, which is the main traffic public transportation hub in Los Angeles, up to Dodger Stadium, which is in the process with the city of L.A., and we're working through all of the various public agencies to work on a project like that. And then also recently announced a relationship with the Boring Company, which is Elon Musk's company that does these high-speed tunnels that they're working on in both L.A. and Chicago at the moment. And, you know, it's an exciting thing for us to be able to put a few of those things in the pipeline and help mitigate some of the traffic coming to Dodger Stadium and help us think about how do we utilize the land around Dodger Stadium more as an amenity and a benefit to fans as opposed to a place where they sit in traffic.
Is there? Yeah, but last time I left the stadium, I actually sat with you during the game. It did take me a couple hours to get back to Santa Monica. Thank you very much. But is there a material change to the business of the Dodgers if there is sort of a hyperlink between the West Side and the stadium?
You know, I do think there is. You know, I think there's unfortunately enough friction in that opportunity to come out to the stadium that we lose a group that I think would be open, interested, and excited to participate with us in Dodgers baseball. So I think that link is going to be hopefully pretty opportunistic for us and something that we're excited with the prospects of. Obviously, a ways to go here to get that to come to fruition, but the hope is, you know, as always, is to try to take as much friction out of the fan experience as we can. If we're able to do that and really let the game and the stadium, as we talked about, kind of stand for itself and stand on its own, we feel really confident in our ability and the fans' interest in what we're doing. It's when we add these friction points or you know, not add, but you know, realistically have these friction points that exist in a city like Los Angeles, just from a infrastructure perspective. If we can help solve that, we think there's some material upside in terms of who we bring into the building, how we bring them into the building, and what they're willing to do when they get there.
We're talking to Dodgers CFO Tucker Cain, and I want to talk about in 2012, sports history was made because the Guggenheim Group came together and purchased the Dodgers in an incredible story. Is like we're talking when we that's the one that crossed into the billions when that happened. Can you tell us about that that experience and how hard it was to put all that together?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a probably a once in a lifetime opportunity.
I hope, from a media perspective, having to cover it, I hope that's true.
That's right, as you can imagine. So obviously, it was very well publicized, but the process through which that transaction happened was a pretty amazing one, just with the amount of interest, with the circumstances surrounding it through the bankruptcy process and the, you know, all those things that really led to the sale of the franchise.
But Bud Selig not allowing Frank McCourt's TV deal,
yeah,
which put the team in bankruptcy.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, as we approached it, it was really, again, once-in-a-lifetime type of opportunity. And our perspective is you don't get the chance to buy an asset of this nature and this type very often, if at all. And so we really took as you saw, you know, looking back, a pretty aggressive approach relative to what we thought the kind of, you know, a combination of assets were worth, right? When you have a historic, iconic global franchise like the Dodgers at a time where sports television rights are exploding and there's, you know, the land asset we spoke about and some of the opportunities we saw as we evaluated the business, just made it such an opportunity that we thought we were able to, and got to the point where we were willing to pay the number that we did. And you know, a lot of people asked, you know, how'd you get there relative to some of the reporting around some of the other bids? And really, at the end of the day, our perspective is we paid what we thought it was worth, and we're willing to step into that, given the iconic nature and the opportunity set that a franchise and brand and platform like the Dodgers would create for our owners. So it was a fascinating, exciting, hectic process, but one that, you know, has turned out to be really, really great and really exceeded our expectations across the board in terms of the opportunity that we had with the club and what we've been able to do so far. We feel very fortunate to have really played that through after a pretty wild purchase process there.
We are chatting with Tucker Kane, the CFO of the Dodgers. And Tucker, you're a mild-mannered guy. But come on, give me a little "I told you so" here, because you know very well at that time, people heard $2.15 billion. I could not find a banker, and you know, they know everything. I could not find a banker who thought this was a good deal.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was definitely the perspective. You know, you want to say "you told you so"? I'm not sure, you know, because I'm sure there'll be another one on the other side where
smart man. Same people on the way up as the way down.
Exactly, but at the same time, you know, the opportunity that existed, you know, we kind of challenged ourselves and reviewed our work, you know, more times than you might otherwise, just because of the size and scope and kind of the relative expectation that was in the market. But, you know, we really took a hard look at the marketplace, the media landscape, the potential media partners, the opportunity to create a competitive bidding process around the local television rights, and then also thinking about what that franchise with the Los Angeles Dodgers mean to baseball, you know, U.S. domestic sports and global sports, and if we could strike the right chord, put the right plan in place, build it, you know, the right way from a player side, scouting and player development, and really, you know, investing in the long-term future and sustainable success. You know, we saw just a lot of upside that hadn't been tapped for whatever reason or whatever variety of reasons that may be. And we were willing to step into that and, you know, bet on ourselves a little bit. We thought we had a really good team with, you know, Stan Kasten, the president and CEO of the team, who's a, you know, a legendary sports executive and somebody who you know, had a plan and a vision, and with the resources available from our ownership group, we just thought that combination was something that was really unique, really, you know, put us in a position to take advantage of all those opportunities, and we're willing to make sure that it was us that got to pursue that as opposed to somebody else. And a lot of credit, obviously, to Mark Walter, our chairman and primary owner, for seeing that value and you know, making an aggressive and strong push to buy the team, which resulted in us being here today. So it's been a fantastic journey and started a place of, you know, a lot of questions and doubts, and I think we've been able to answer a lot of those questions and doubts and put ourselves in a position where this is a platform that we're going to continue to try to grow and build and take advantage of.
We are chatting with Tucker Kane, the CFO of the Dodgers, and I think you're going to be able to answer this, Tuck, and Michael Barr, I want to see if you know it. You know how I know that Stan Kasten is sort of one of the most respected sports executives out there? Do you know how I know that, Tuck?
How's that?
Stan told me. Silence on that side of the phone. Silence on that side of the phone. Go ahead, Barr.
If he can back it up, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to go back to the dugout loop that you have with Elon Musk. And one thing that people may not be aware of, this loop is zero emissions, which, you know, obviously for California, that's a great thing.
It is. And actually the aerial tram I mentioned earlier is as well. So it was really important for us to not only find transportation alternatives. You know, as Scott mentioned, you know, it can be very tough, especially for big marquee events like the ones we're going to, we've been hosting this year, it can be very, very difficult. So the primary initiative, obviously, is to find alternatives from a transportation perspective. But, you know, it's been really, you know, kind of great for us and beneficial and something we're very proud of, that we've been able to find a few options that are no emission and can be, you know, really additive to the community and not, you know, continuing to pile on some of the effects and some of the issues that already exist in the city of LA and more broadly. So it's a really exciting piece of our future here. You know, I think as we've tried to articulate to folks and live day to day, we try to be as thoughtful, innovative, forward thinking as we can. I think that's our obligation from running an organization that, you know, brought Jackie Robinson into Major League Baseball and all the other kind of social and pop culture influences that, you know, the Dodgers as a brand have had historically. And if we can keep that thoughtful, forward-thinking, innovative perspective and be willing to try and be willing to test and work on some of these things, I think it gives us a really great spot to be in and innovate and push forward. And the dugout loop and the aerial tram are two of those things that we're excited to be pursuing and putting our kind of full weight and resources behind.
Speaking of innovation, Barr, you know how we always talk about on this show that these teams are tentpoles for something, media, real estate. It's all that for the Dodgers. But there's also the Global Sports Venture Studio, which you may not know. The Dodgers serve as an incubator for other companies, and then they can utilize whatever that product may be or technology for good of the Dodgers to global scale. How many companies now, Tuck? Where does the Venture Studio stand these days?
Yeah, so we're up to about 30 companies, which we're really proud of and excited about. And so, you know, it's an initiative that was born out of curiosity, quite frankly. I think, you know, as we came in 2012 and started thinking about where does this business go and where does our industry go and how do we make sure we stay relevant and top of mind and in our customers and fans' day-to-day lives, we recognize that technology is something that's changing the day-to-day lives of our fans, and it's something that's giving them better, you know, experiences, more real-time experiences, more diversity of choice, and all those things. And so we recognized we had to institutionalize our relationship to innovation and change and technology. And given the background of our ownership group as investors and entrepreneurs themselves, we thought an incredible place to start would be with startup companies that are thinking about sports and entertainment. They're thinking about the problems and opportunities that exist and how can technology help impact and influence those. And it's actually a pretty fascinating thing when you ask other people what your problems are. the responses you get back can be pretty fascinating.
I do not ask other people what my problems are. I am afraid.
Yeah, you tried once with me. Yeah. We shut that down.
That
real
was the
fast.
Whole show.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. So to hear that back and get that intel, get that information, and have a process through which you know started as our Dodger Accelerator and is now iterated into the Global Sports Venture Studio, I think has just given us a chance to be much more open-minded, much more real-time in our reactions and deploy some of these technologies into Dodger Stadium, into our player development system, into the various things that we do on a day-to-day basis, and then, you know, having the expectation or thought that those things, if they work for us, could scale more broadly, and how do we take advantage of that and participate in that and help facilitate it? And so investing in these businesses seemed to make all the sense in the world to us. And so we're there, doing the best we can. The 30 companies and the nine partners we've brought into the Global Sports Venture Studio, we think really put us in a position to execute there.
You mentioned about Jackie Robinson. And I, on his birthday, on April 15th, they wear the number 42, and I know for a fact that I will never forget that day because that's my birthday also. Yeah. In case you didn't know that. You didn't know that.
I thought you were 42 years old.
No.
Even Tucker's laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, add a zero to the
end of that. He must have looked you up on the internet.
I bring it up about Jackie Robinson because one of the things that I'm big on in any professional sporting team or whatever is encouraging the youth to, one, play the game and, two, know a bit about the history of the game. Can you tell us more about how the Dodgers try to encourage the youth out there about playing baseball and what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, by the way, on you know, young kids learning the game, learning how you play it, learning the nuances, learning the history. I think those are incredibly powerful, not only as baseball fans, but I think as you learn life lessons and as you think about, you know, becoming a, you know, growing up and becoming a you know, productive adult in society and learning the teamwork and all the things that come with it are super valuable. So I agree completely with you there. We've done a couple things on this front, and I got to give a lot of credit to our foundation, our executive director, Nicole Whiteman, and the Los Angeles Dodgers Foundation, who run a program in conjunction with Major League Baseball, RBI, Revitalizing Baseball in Inner Cities. And last year, and she'd do better with the stats than I will, but I think we got almost 10,000 kids from underserved communities playing baseball and coming through that program. And so those types of things where we create opportunities for folks that may not have it otherwise, we can provide the equipment and the field space and all of those things. The foundation's also built 50 Dodger Dream Fields, so baseball fields, baseball diamonds and softball diamonds in inner city areas in Los Angeles, and just made another commitment to build another 25. So really impactful, amazing things. We're teaching and getting our players and our former players and out into the community to teach the game and help spread the word and bring some of the history of the Dodger organization. And then recently we also announced a partnership with Nomar Garciaparra and his partner Aaron Trolia, who's a former minor league pitcher, who have built a pretty incredible academy training program. And it's a local academy training program where it's you know, targeted to relatively small you know, kind of radius around a particular facility, and it's really focused on instruction. You know, there are a lot of really great, well-to-do parents and people that are trying to coach their kids playing baseball and softball all over the country, but can we really inject a level of instruction from the folks, you know, like a Nomar Garciaparra, the people who have been there, who understand the game, who really can teach the core skill set? Because we think that's not only going to create a better experience, it's going to create longevity and you know, reduce attrition out of the sport, create a more direct relationship. We're going to call that the Dodger Training Academy in L.A., so create an even better relationship with the Major League Club, just to really build on some of the historical and innovative things that have happened in the organization and build it all around the sport, you know, baseball and softball. So it's a pretty exciting time for us, something we think is hugely important as we move forward, and something we're spending a lot of time and resource against.
Hey, Tucker, let me bring this back to one of the most talked about business aspects of the Dodgers, and that's the lack of distribution from the TV deal. I know it's the bane of Stan Kasten's existence, but, and I don't know if you guys can say this, but I haven't seen any material damage to the Dodger brand. People go, here you are in the World Series, you're winning. I mean, that cures a lot of ills. But has there been any material damage to the Dodger brand not being fully distributed? Of course, you'd like to, and you want them to show your games. But has there been any damage?
Yeah, you know, it would be really hard to say there's been none. I think, you know, us being in front of our fans and showing our product and showing these amazing players that we have that have been performing at levels that, you know, the Dodger franchise has never seen before is really a shame and something that we're, you know, really, as you pointed out, it's the bane of Stan's existence at the moment, all of ours. And it's something that we, you know, work as hard as we can, as diligently as we can with our partners. And, you know, there's a landscape that's moving pretty rapidly around us, right? As you think about the media landscape and the consolidation of a bunch of these companies and how they're thinking about content and, you know, the rise of over-the-top distribution. And there's a lot of of moving pieces that we're kind of caught in the middle of at the moment, and how those play out is something we're trying to better understand. We're trying to see if we can't help influence to a place where it will lead to distribution of the Dodger broadcast across all of Los Angeles. But so it'd be hard to say there's no impact. We've been blessed and we're lucky to have the type of fan base that we do that comes out and the numbers they do and engage with us in the way they do and the excitement and relationship we have with our fan bases, you know, especially at Dodger Stadium, is an all-time high. But it's something that we need to address and we need to continue to work on, and we're hopeful that we'll make progress here. But it has gone on longer than we would have liked and hoped. So something we need to continue to work as best we can to find a solution to, because over time we need to be in front of all of our fans. We need to be in front of kids who are thinking about sports and what they care about and what's interesting to them. And if we're not in that conversation, that's a long-term problem for us and something we're going to need to address.
Okay, speaking long-term, a while back the ownership said it was considering bringing on some investors. Can you bring us up to the state of where is that process and anybody interesting in the pipeline?
Yeah, you know, it's something that we thought really made sense to do and something I imagine will be executed on. The nice thing is it's not a requirement. It's more of an opportunity to bring other smart, thoughtful, great people into the group and help drive value. And so, you know, it's something we kind of continue to think about and work on. You know, I don't have anything at the moment to kind of talk about or from a specific or individual perspective, but I would expect us to continue down that path. And it's a nice position to be where you can find people that you like that you know work with our ownership group, can add value to the ownership group, and really you know help us progress and move forward, as opposed to being, you know, just about a dollar amount or anything like that. So that's it's something that we're working on. Nothing to announce at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised if something does get announced in the next you know this off season. I would imagine would be a place where that'll ramp up a little bit more as we have a little more time and attention to focus on our ownership and partner group.
Tucker Cain, the CFO of the Los Angeles Dodgers, the same team that gave Greg Brady the big head. Remember that? Remember that episode?
I do.
Yeah, remember that with Don Drysdale?
Don Drysdale in school. He was dating the teacher.
Yeah, well, no, that was another episode. This was the one. Yeah, you're right. That was the one where he was dating. Yeah. Anyway, so he told, you know, all of a sudden now Greg is thinking bonus baby and all of that. That's how I got introduced to.
Unfortunately for you, Tucker, I mean, as great as that was and Drysdale, it'll never live up to the Joe Namath.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
I mean, and you're okay with that, right?
That's true.
All right, Tucker. Thanks so much, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Takeaways. And one thing I'm passionate about, and I brought it up when I was talking with Tucker.
Food,
about
getting drink.
Yeah, well, all right. Number three on the list.
The third thing I'm
passionate about is I want the youth to get into sports. I want them to understand any sport, just like baseball. I want them to understand the history of baseball. I want them to understand the rules and technique. And I'm glad that Tucker mentioned that just like many major sport teams, that they have a venue for that.
Have you been to the Jackie Robinson Museum down on Canal?
No, I would love to go.
Oh, I'll go with you. How's that?
Let's go, man.
We'll go.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I would like to go.
Yeah, you can. There's a few spots to sit down and relax afterwards.
Yeah.
All right, you got it. I'm struck by, again, I talk about this all the time on the show, that these teams cannot exist by themselves. You don't buy a sports team just to have a sports team. This was a media play for the regional sports network. They don't have full distribution. That's okay, because they were promised payment from Time Warner, full amount, no matter what kind of distribution they had. And he said, yeah, you can't help but feel that the brand takes a little bit of a hit because our fans don't see us. But let's be clear here, Barr. They're making a ton of money. They're doing well. Their fans are watching. It's a pretty interesting scenario in which right now, if I'm the other cable operators, the Dodgers can be like, You know, yeah. We're not really getting hurt by this. So, you know, maybe we can outlast you.
My goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
Time now for the number of the week. This, I'm going to give you a hint.
We did not discuss. We have to tell the audience. This week we did not discuss.
No, we did not discuss this. But I'm going to give you some clues to the numbers, to the number of the week here. Because we were talking about Jackie Robinson. It involves another
African. If it's not 42.
It's not.
I mean, come on.
It's not 42. I will say that. It's not 42. But it involves another African-American player who's made history in Major League Baseball. And
Larry Doby.
No, but that's a good guess.
It's not enough.
Willie Mays.
Wow.
Say
that's
hey.
That's right.
Say hey what?
Really?
That's right. The number was
I got it?
The number was 24 that I was going
yet.
For.
Just guessing.
But I said Willie Mays.
Yes, that was the
wore, Say Hey Kid.
The Say Hey Kid number say 24. Hey,
Medina.
Wore that.
I actually know something.
Wow.
Without Googling?
I if you saw the meme with my eyes like dang, she got it. the number's 24.
Who needs me?
I mean, it was, you know, because that's, you wore that, especially when you had the Polo Grounds back in the day in the 54 World Series, and it was the number was 24, and, you know, with that fabulous, you know, catch and everything.
You know what that takes me back to, Medina? The 1979 Daytona 500.
You're not going to let me
I didn't mean to just chime in at the time, but I thought of the name, and I knew that it had to be him, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. We love it.
That was good,
Next week, you're taking first shot at the number of the week, because I don't think I've ever gotten it, and I know nothing.
I didn't even get to the number, and you got it, man. That was
I'm
that
sorry.
Was good.
I'm sorry I ruined it
No,
for you.
No. I'm impressed.
I'm always impressed.
Trust me, I'm impressed at myself right now.
I'm always impressed with Medina.
Thank you.
How about that?
Next week, I'll tell you about the 1976 Daytona 500.
I'm sure you will. I think I'm going
to
be sick.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We're here each and every week at the same time. Turn your head. Plus, online as a podcast, we're available. You can catch that Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm Scott Soschnick. You can follow me on Twitter at Soschnick. Thank you very much for joining us. Please tune in next week when we once again speak with the biggest and brightest in the sports business industry.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world and online, and where our podcast is available.